Hey, what's up, everybody? Good morning. We're so glad you guys are here with us at Motion. Hey, sometimes, have you guys ever sung a song? I remember, I'll do this sometimes. Like, there's a song, I grew up in the 90s, which probably was the greatest music decade ever, might I add. And so I sang songs when I was a teenager, and I look at, like, I'll hear a phrase now, and I'll look back at the lyrics, and I'm like, I had no idea, right? You had no idea what you were singing. Have you ever done that? Anybody else ever done it? Okay, good. Sometimes I think we do that in church. Sometimes I think we sing songs and we don't really know what it means. I think we just kind of like read it or sing it because everybody else is singing it. We kind of go with it. And so I wanted to take just a minute. We sing that song. It's such an incredible song. How can it be? And you think about the grace and the mercy of God and the fact that while we were yet sinners, that Christ would die for us. Like, and the weight of that, right? And so there's a phrase in there, an expression in there. It says, "You break my chains." And sometimes I don't think we realize, man, that it's like Jesus who breaks the sin off of our life. And if it weren't for that, we would be held up in all of these different sorts of bondage and weight. And so in Hebrews chapter 12, it says this. It says, and it's coming out of Hebrews chapter 11, which is called the Hall of Fame of Faith. And it talks about all of these great, incredible people who've lived these incredible lives and done great things for God. And it says this after it says that. Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1, 2, maybe 3, maybe 20. We'll see. It says, therefore, since we have been surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every encumbrance, every weight, and the sin which so easily entangles us, the bondage, the things that chain us down. And so I was thinking about the way that it finishes. It says, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and finisher. Another version says, the perfecter of our faith. And so the only way we ever get out of sin, the only way we ever get out of the chains that bind us is Jesus, right? Like, that's it. And when you think about that, how can it be? Like, how awesome is that? Why? Why would he do that for me? Because he loves us. It's not because of you. It's in spite of you. And that's good news. That's what the gospel is. So anyway, I just wanted to take a minute and explain that. I thought it's important. We don't just sing the songs, that we think about the lyrics and what they mean to us and how they apply to our life. Because otherwise, you might as well just be doing some techno stuff if you don't let that stuff get inside of you, right? Which I'm down with some techno stuff too, but let's get the good stuff, then we'll go to the techno. So we're continuing our series this week called Influence. And we talked about this far. We talked about how each of us have a responsibility to influence others. None of us are exempt from this. And it doesn't matter what your vocation is, what your job is, if you're a parent, if you're married, if you're single, it doesn't matter. Every one of us has a responsibility to influence others. If it weren't the case, if that wasn't the way that this whole thing was set up, then Jesus would have said specifically in Matthew chapter 5 to the people that are supposed to be influencers and excluded the rest of us, right? But he doesn't do that. He's like, you, all of you, let your light shine before men that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father who's in heaven. He didn't make exceptions for people. He didn't include and exclude anybody. He's like, all of you, let your light shine. We all have a responsibility to influence. And then last week, we kind of talked about how we can increase our influence by increasing the amount of God that's in our lives. And we talked about our schedules, which this is what we do. We tell people what our schedules are, but if we really looked at our schedules would probably tell us that our priorities are different than what we say they are, right? Because we say what our priorities are, but what you really devote the most of your time to is what is really most important to you. Time is a measurement of what you take pride in, what you take pleasure in. And so if you devote all of your time to the frivolous things and very little time to God, then God's not really that important to you. But that's none of my business. Actually, it is my business. You're here. I'm the pastor. I'm going to tell you about it, right? Okay. And you show up every week and you listen to this. So apparently, you're interested somewhat. That or there's a hot girl that invited you. That's how I started going to church. I'm not kidding. Tell the truth. Shame the devil, right? And so that's what we've talked about so far. This week, we're going to talk about how we're talking about the last week, this week, and next week. We're talking about ways to increase our influence. And this week is we're going to talk about increasing our influence through intelligence. And so for some of us that have less than stellar IQs, it may seem like a dangerous place to go. But it's not, because every one of us can increase our intelligence. And we're going to talk intelligence. See, you see my intelligence shining through? Intelligence, see? What had happened was. And so wherever you're at, like, there are ways that you can increase your intelligence. Like, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to influence people. You can increase your ability to influence people just by increasing your intelligence and whatever that looks like for you specifically. And I think it's important to note, because a lot of times I'll say things like kind of mean towards smart people, usually just because I'm jealous. But we say things like, the bigger the head, the smaller the heart, right? But that's not the way it's supposed to be. That's just the way it seems to be a lot of times. In fact, it should be just the opposite. The more that you know, the more that you learn about God and what he expects of you, the more that you should do. Like, we shouldn't just be hearers of the word, increasing our knowledge. We should be doers of the word, increasing our faith and our activity and our life in Christ, right? So it's not the way that it should be. Unfortunately, it is the way that it is sometimes. And so the more that we learn about God, the more that we learn about ourselves, and the more that we learn about other people, we should be able to use that knowledge to serve others better and more fully. That's the way that it should be. So that's what we're going to look at today. We're going to look at a few components under the umbrella of intelligence, and hopefully we can all take something away from this and do something with it, right? Hey, can we have a moment, please? You guys, you have survived the longest drought and driest season of the year. Football season is officially here. I walked Thursday, NFL started on Thursday. I walked into the gym and there was a guy standing at the desk and I just kind of stuck my hand up and I was like, we made it. Coming into the promised land. So anyway, I know you guys are all happy. The first aspect or component of intelligence that we're going to look at today is wisdom. And a lot of these are, they all kind of mean the same thing, but there's like subtle variations that I think are important to point out. So the first component of intelligence that we can increase is our wisdom. And we're going to start right here. Proverbs chapter 4, verse 7, it says this. It says, getting wisdom is the wisest thing you can do. Isn't that good? And it says it like with an exclamation point, right? So you got to put the emphasis on it. I'm not going to do that. You guys get the point. Getting wisdom is the wisest thing that you can do. Like, increasing your intelligence is the smartest thing that you can do. Pursuing knowledge is the most important thing that you can do, because as you pursue knowledge and you increase in knowledge, everything else should follow that. Your activity and your behaviors, because our behaviors follow our beliefs, but our beliefs are formed by our knowledge, right? So as you increase in knowledge, everything else should follow that. So that's the most important thing that you can do. And then it says right after that, and whatever else you do, develop good judgment. Now, I think we all have a friend, like that one friend who has terrible judgment, right? Just makes mistake after mistake after mistake. And you can talk to them all the day long or till you're blue in the face, and they still make stupid mistakes, like dumb decisions. And so don't be that person. And if you can't think of that friend, you're that friend. Right? Getting wisdom is the wisest thing you can do. And whatever else you do, develop good judgment. And I think it's important to notice that it doesn't just say, and get good judgment or have good judgment. It says develop good judgment. It speaks to maturing and the process through which we go in order to get to this place. And so as our wisdom increases, the more we learn about God, the greater our capacity to influence other people. As we learn about, just think about, if as you learn it, and you've probably done this on different levels, and I know we're all at different places, but we've all probably done this to some degree. As you learn about the nature and the character of God, what that does for me, and I hope that does for you, is you learn how he relates to you. And kind of like we talked about, like while we were still sinners, and I think about the way that grace applies to me, even though I know that grace should not apply to me. Like, and I think about mercy and God withholding judgment for me, even though I deserve judgment, right? When I realize how God relates to me, it helps me relate to other people. It helps me try to relate to other people in the same way that God has related to me, to give grace even when they don't deserve grace, to give mercy, to withhold my wrath and my judgment even when they deserve my wrath and my judgment. Preacher. Because it's going, right? And so in many ways, this parallels with what we talked about last week, how when God increases in your life, and we talked about specifically kind of Galatians chapter 5, the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, and self-control, right? So as you learn about these things and you incorporate these things into your life, it gives you more influence. And so this way, in this way, this parallels that in a lot of ways, right? So as God, the knowledge of God increases in our life, then, and as we apply that, not just know it, do something with it. You know what the difference between knowledge and wisdom is? Knowledge is knowing something. Wisdom is knowing something and doing something. We got a lot of knowledge, but we need more wisdom. We need people who know what to do and actually follow through and do what they know to do. And so kind of as we learn more about God, the wisdom in our life increases, the influence in our life increases. So let me just give you some examples about this. As we learn about grace, how many of you, again, you've probably had a thought that crossed your mind or you heard and you just kind of went with it in the moment, and then the more you thought about it, you're like, hold up. You ever had one of those? It's like an epiphany. And so, like, you know, somebody just says, heads I win, tails you lose. And you're just like, okay. And you always lose and you can't figure it out. And then you start to think about it. Some of you still don't know what that is. You never win. If it's heads, I win, tails, you lose. Regardless, I win, you lose. And so a lot of times people will just go with it because they don't put any thought into the idea or the topic. And I think that happens to us sometimes. We hear about grace, for example, and we're just like, oh, yeah, that's awesome. By grace, we're saved. Cool. And you don't really put enough thought into it to realize, like, how big of a deal that is and how much that matters and how unfair. Let's talk about fair, because we throw that word around sometimes. We're like, oh, life's not fair. Jesus isn't fair. It's not fair that Jesus died on the cross for you. That's not fair. It's not fair that God gave his son to go through all of the things that he went through for you and me, even when we reject him half the time and we're not as obedient as we should be and we don't give him ourselves as we fully should. That's not fair. Don't talk about fair. You want to talk about fair, we'll talk about fair, but you don't want to go there. Don't get me started, right? So as we think about it a little deeper, as we delve in to the information a little bit, as we pay attention to the things that are going on in Scripture, you see that grace is rich, man. It's deep. There's a lot there. And what that does, it puts some responsibility on you to treat other people a little bit differently, right? That's what grace is about. And knowledge, it all starts with wisdom. As you're learning these things, you do something with what it is that you learn. You learn to forgive other people, not based on our feelings toward them, because if that were the case, you would never forgive anybody. If my forgiveness of other people only happened when I was at a place in my life where it didn't bother me anymore, I would never forgive anybody, because anytime I start to think about when somebody wronged me, my blood pressure starts to rise, right? Like, you can't wait for your emotions to be where they need to be before you forgive somebody. You forgive somebody, and then your emotions will get where they need to be. And they're not the ones losing sleep over it. You're the one losing sleep over it. I've heard this, and this is so true, man. And this is something every one of us needs to take away and remember, lock it in the vault, write it on your mirror and lipstick, whatever you got to do. Unforgiveness. I mean, I don't have any lipstick. I hope you do, females. I saw the guys cracking up. I was like, that was obviously directed toward the ladies, right? Unforgiveness is like this. It's like you drinking poison and expecting it to hurt the other person. You're drinking the poison, but you think it's going to hurt the other person. You're harboring the bitterness and the resentment, and you think it's going to hurt them. They're not losing sleep over it, cuz you are. Get over it. Forgive them. Don't wait for your emotions to be where you think they need to be. Just forgive and move on. We forgive not based on our feelings toward other people or their performance, because other people, you know, this is what we do. I do this, and I hope you do this too, so I don't feel so bad, right? We expect things from other people that are so unreasonable, and we never really expect the same level of effort, or, you know, we don't have the same expectations for ourselves. Like, we hold people to this entirely different standard than we hold ourselves to sometimes. Like, oh, I can't believe they would do that. And when we do it, we have all of these justifications in our mind as to why we would do that. Come on, man, right? So forgiveness, we don't do it based on our feelings. We don't do it based on their performance. And we always give grace even when it isn't fair. Let's not talk about fair. That's something you can do tonight. This Gregg County's still having it, I believe. As we learn, speaking of wisdom, as we learn about the character of God, it gives us a framework for our lives. It gives us kind of these parameters to live in. It builds the wall for our life. 1 John 4:8 says this. It says, whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. Whoever does not love doesn't know God. And I didn't say this, right? Because we've talked about this before. I think you see people who are Christians who are very mean and just angry. And I'm like, man, you're missing the point. And it says, whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. And as we learn that, like you read it the first time, you're like, oh, cool, God is loving. That's kind of the takeaway. But then as you read it and you kind of look more into it, it's like not only that God has love, it says God is love. That's who he is. That's his character. That's his nature. And so it gives us something to aspire to. It helps us to want to have love at the center of who we are, right? Like, and I know I am so far from home, right? I've got a lot of work to do, and I suspect you do too. Learning that God is love, not just that he has love, it gives us this standard, this goal to aspire to. When you couple that knowledge with some other verses, like now you kind of know what to do, and you got to figure out how you implement that into your life. You read verses like Romans chapter 12, verse 9, it says this. This is so good. Everybody put your steel-toe boots on, because I'm coming at you. Don't just pretend to love others. Because I think we do that sometimes. I think we kind of just go with the flow, and we're like, oh, I love you, and you don't. We use the word love so loosely, like you love shoes and you love your car and you love this and you love that. But love is so much deeper than that. Don't just pretend to love others. Really love them. Period. No commas, no semicolons, none of that. Really love them. And you kind of go back to understanding that God is love, not that he has love. Then you can love people who don't necessarily deserve to be loved. Just like remembering where you were at and who you were and the things that you were doing and the way that you rejected God. Even though you were unlovable, God still demonstrated his love towards you through Jesus dying on the cross. So just kind of all of the knowledge works together, and as we increase our wisdom, it helps us to influence other people. We learn about God, and it challenges us to do the same thing, to have the same characteristics, to relate to people the same way that he relates to people. And that increases our influence. Again, like last week, who would not be open to being influenced by somebody who is gracious and loving? You know, I may not, there's a great quote, you know, somebody comes to a Christian church and they, you know, experience what a Christian church should be, they leave, and they may not necessarily agree with everything that we have to say, but they can't argue with our love. They can argue with our theology all the day long, but they can't argue with the love that we have for him. And if that's the case, then we've won. We've done everything that we can do as followers of Jesus. And so the takeaway is really simple from this point. We got one more, and I'll get through it, right? The takeaway from this point, you guys must be like, no, I'll keep preaching, preacher. Yeah. That never happened. I've had one person, we've been doing this for almost 4 years, and I've had one person say, man, I wish you would preach longer. And they're not here anymore, so figure that out. I'm just having an honest moment with you guys. Just let me do something real quick. Do not never, ever, ever tell me that, like, you're with us. I love this church. I'm going to be here till I die. Because when you do that, I have a funeral for you in my head. Because that means you're leaving. Anyway, it's funny how, I better stop. Y'all going to get me fired. Y'all getting me off subject. Good Lord. So the takeaway from this point is very simple. Pursue wisdom and put it into practice. Practice what you preach. And that's for me, man. That's for me. Like, I get convicted. A lot of times, the best messages that I've ever preached, and I don't, there are very few of those. The best messages that I've ever preached are things that I'm struggling through myself, and I feel the weight of it, and I understand how strong and heavy and hard it is. Those are the best messages that I've ever preached, because it means so much to me, and I know that the struggle is real. Hashtag, right? So, read your Bible to learn more about the character and the nature of God. And so you know what your life should look like, and then do something about it. Wisdom isn't just knowing, but it's doing. Man, listen to podcasts. We've got technology. We've got people. You know, this is really cool. This is interesting. I think you guys should know this. We've had over, I think, almost 11,000 people listen, not separate people, but 11,000 plays of our podcast since we've been going. I think that's kind of a staggering number. Now, apparently, 9,900 of those are bots, but it's all good. If you don't know what those are, don't worry about it. Don't sweat it. But listen to podcasts. Man, there are so many fantastic. You're not going to hurt my feelings if you go listen to people that preach better than me. Like, that's not going to hurt my feelings at all. Grow in your wisdom. Grow in your knowledge. Read books. Read articles. We were talking this morning about a book called Love Does. One of the greatest books. It's changed the way that I think in a lot of ways. Read books. Do all of these things to increase your knowledge, but put it into practice. Don't just read for information. Read for transformation. Okay, use that wisdom to serve other people. The second component of intelligence that we're going to look at this morning is this, intuition. So we talked about wisdom, and now we're going to talk about intuition. And you probably have heard this expression. You kind of probably understand what it means. Like, intuition is just having this feeling or kind of this weird way of understanding the way that things work. We use the word in Christianity called discernment. And it kind of means like you just read things and you read people and you can kind of look at the situation and figure out what's going on or what needs to go on. And so I think we should increase our intuition so that we can increase our influence in people's lives. That's another component of it. Intelligence is learning how to view or increasing our intuition is learning how to view, relate to, and influence others. Because here's the deal. Let's just think about this really, really simply. If you've got two children, you know that those two children are probably completely different people. Like, there's no blanket approach to influencing people. If I talked to my daughter the way that I talked to my son, she would shut down. Like, she couldn't handle it. She'd be, like, bawling her eyes out and boo-hoo. And I'm like, come on, woman. Right? But my son, if I talked to my son the way that I talked to my daughter, nothing would ever get done. He'd just keep on doing video games, right? Like, you can speak more directly to some people, and you got to be a little more, you know, soft and encouraging with other people. You just got to learn how to read people, and there's wisdom in that, there's intelligence in that, and increasing your understanding of people and how to relate to people increases your influence. And I think that's huge, because here's the deal. I think the way that the church used to, you know, evangelize, the expression that we use when you're influencing people for Jesus, that's on its most basic terms what it is. It used to be that you would kind of, you know, knock on people's doors or you'd go to the street corner and you'd yell at them with a bullhorn. And in my opinion, that just doesn't work anymore. Dude, you come knocking on my door, I'm shutting down. I don't know. This is what really happens. My son answers the door. He's like, hey, girls, what you want to do? True story. So now the Jehovah's Witnesses think I am a freak because my son's like in the background. Anyway. It happens. And so we should increase our intuition so that we can increase our influence of other people. Like I said, the Bible uses the term discernment. And this is what discernment means. It means to distinguish, to separate out by diligent search, or to examine. Like, you're obviously checking into the situation. You're checking into people. You're trying to figure out what's going on. I hate to use the phrase, but I think it's something we can understand. You try to read people because maybe I'm just jaded, because when people try to read me, this is what they try to do. They, like, psychoanalyze me. So what's going on in your life? Like, what's really going on in your life? I'm like, bro, I'm good. Back off. And then they think something's really wrong with me, and I've got some kind of childhood issue that I haven't dealt with. So, but we should read people. We should find darkness so that we can be light to darkness. We should find hurts in people's lives so that we can help be compassionate and healing, not that we heal, but God through us, right? And so I think it's important to read people and read circumstances and read situations. Man, if you just went through life and you just kind of did all of your hellos and how are you and your formal greetings and all that stuff, and you never had conversations, you would never help anybody. When we were in youth ministry, I remember, man, it was so clear in my head. On Wednesday nights, it was a blur. Like, it was just crazy. We had like 250 kids, and we were just like, just go, 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 go. And I remember, I wrote this down one time, and it was a quote. Original, right? There's very few of those, too. I steal stuff, man. And it's a lot easier to say hello to 50 kids than say how are you to one. Right? It's a lot easier to say hello to 50 people then ask somebody how they're doing, how they're really doing, to have some conversation, to get into their lives a little bit, to read their lives a little bit, to find the hurts in their life, to find the things that are wrong or off or missing in their lives and actually make a difference in their lives. And so, man, we've got a responsibility to do that. You can be friendly and you can kind of do all your hello, how are you things, you know, and the informal stuff, but get in people's lives.
and have them trust you enough to allow you to get in their lives, because that speaks volumes to who you are, that somebody would open up to you. And so we've got a responsibility to be light in darkness. We've got a responsibility to serve other people. And you can't serve them if you don't know what's going on. And just a note on that, like we get so mixed up in this as our knowledge increases and we think that we're all that. You know that the 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 4, it says this: in everything we do, we show that we are true ministers of God. We patiently endure troubles and hardships and calamities of every kind. And I think it's kind of interesting there. You know that that's for all of us. Like Paul is writing this letter saying essentially that we're all ministers. That's all of our responsibility. You know what the word minister means? It means to serve. That's what it means. It doesn't mean to stand up here and deliver some, you know, ridiculously fantastic oration. It means to serve other people, to serve other people. And you do that by figuring out what's going on in their life. What's their greatest need? What's the most pressing thing happening in their lives? And you meet that need. You find a need and you meet it. That's what serving is, and that's what intuition, how it all kind of comes into play. You can't do that if you never take time to increase your intuition. And as you do that, man, think about what that means. Like if you meet the greatest, most pressing need in somebody's lives, be it physical or emotional or financial, if you do that, think about the increase of influence that you have in their life. Like if you basically alleviated the greatest problem that somebody has in their life, how much would they trust you? How much would they be interested in listening to what it is that you have to say? I think that it greatly increases our influence. And isn't it, it's just kind of, I think Jesus was masterful in this regard. Like Jesus was so intuitive. He was so sharp. Isn't it ironic that almost all of the documented communication of Jesus was stories? It was parables, it was analogies, it was ways that he could communicate to people in a way that they would understand. He knew where they were at. He knew the needs and the hurts and the things that they had going on in their lives, and he communicated to them in such a way that they could understand. He had intuition. He read the crowd, he read the people, and he communicated to them so that they wouldn't just kind of be like, oh, that's cool. They would leave the conversation and go do something with the information. Right? And I think we should do the same thing in our lives. Matthew chapter 13, verse 34, it says this: Jesus spoke all of these things to the crowd in parables. He did not say anything to them without using a parable, a story. He would talk about, a lot of times he would talk about farmers, and he'd talk about farming, because a large portion of the people that he were talking to, they understood it, they got it, and they kind of could relate the kingdom of God to farming. He talked about money a lot. He talked about money more than he talked about heaven and hell combined, right? Money. But you can't talk about money in church. Everybody gets their stuff happens. God, filter kicked in just in time, right? And so I think the method should be the same for us. You've probably heard this said, the package or the presentation may change, but the message remains the same. And that's it. It's just that simple. How we communicate to people may be different, and how you influence people may be different, but the message remains the same, that we are light that shines in the darkness. We're hopeless. I mean, we're not hopeless. We're hope in hopelessness. We give hope in despair. That's what we're here for. Like, that's what we, as followers of Jesus, have to offer. And so we've got to use our intuition, increase our intuition so that we can increase our intelligence, so that we can increase our influence. And so today I just want to wrap up with a challenge that's really, really, really simple. It's just that we increase our intelligence and use that to serve other people. And it doesn't get any easier than that. Like I said before, the definition of wisdom is knowing what to do and actually doing something with what we know to do. And so this morning, I want to pray for some people that maybe you've got some decisions coming up in your life and you need God's wisdom in your life so that you can make the right decision, you can have good judgment, and that as you make good decisions and you have good judgment, it increases your influence. If everybody in the room would just close your eyes and bow your heads. Man, if that's you, if you've got some stuff going on in your life, some things that you need some wisdom from God for, to know how to make the best decision and to navigate through maybe some difficult circumstances, I just want you to stick up your hand and we're going to pray for you specifically. Awesome. Very cool.
Father, thank you so much for everything that you do for us, for your incredible, incredible love and grace and mercy, God, that we don't deserve, God, that we could never perform well enough to earn it, but you give it anyway. God, I pray that you would help us to always pay that forward, to always extend the kind of mercy and grace and forgiveness to others that you've extended to us. God, that we would never take for granted your love and your kindness. God, I pray that every person in this room, God, we would find ways to increase our wisdom. God, it's the most important thing that we can do according to Proverbs 4:7, that we would increase our wisdom. We would increase our understanding of you, our knowledge of you, our understanding of your character and your nature. And as we do that, God, our lives would change, that we wouldn't just have information, we would have transformation. God, I pray for every person in the room that has some situations in their life, some circumstances that they need your wisdom to deal with, to work through. God, I pray that you would give it to them. It says in James, God, that you give wisdom if we ask. So this morning, God, we ask for your wisdom. For every person, God, that needs to make some decisions, that has to make some tough calls or whatever it is that's going on, God, that your wisdom will be in their lives and they would follow your lead, that you would show them the steps that they should take to get through whatever it is they have to get through, and that you would be honored, you would be glorified, and other people would be influenced. Jesus, we love you. We thank you so much for all that you do, and it's in your precious name we pray. And everybody said, amen.